But we start hour number two by talking to a national NBA writer for The Washington Post. He is host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, host of Open Floor Podcast, very good friend of the program. He is Ben Golliver. Ben, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I'm down here in New Orleans. It's just like the afterglow of Zion Williamson's debut. I think I'm still buzzing a little bit. Wild night. I mean, starts so slow, then just, you know, cranks it all the way up in the fourth quarter. And then they just shut him down. He disappears for crunch time because of the minutes limit. I feel like it was just a very layered and textured kind of narrative performance, right? A little bit of like good, bad, and the ugly.
You've done this before, Ben. You already hit on like five of my questions. But let me start right there. You were in New Orleans last night. You still are. You were there for the debut. Now, you and I have talked about this in the past, but for the record, how many times had you seen him play in person before last night?
Look, I'm getting this reputation. I heard from so many people last night that they're convinced I'm the jinx, Jim, because I've seen him twice. The first time he blew his shoe at North Carolina when he played for Duke. The second time he made it 8 minutes into his summer league debut after they sold the whole building out and tickets were going for $400 for a scrimmage, and he gets a minor knee injury and he was done there. So I was two for two on kind of ruining his basketball nights. And he started so slow, right? I mean, the first three quarters, people were saying, you got to leave the building. We need this guy to kind of turn it on, and you're the jinx.
Yeah, Ben Golliver joining us. And that's right, people were losing their minds for all the wrong reasons in the early going. Like, Ben, what kind of expectations did you have for him in his debut? Because, you know, there were so many people just waiting to say he's overrated, he's going to be a bust. Like, in your mind, what would have been a successful night?
Yeah, I came in expecting something like 16-8. You know, I thought that was kind of a conservative. I knew there was going to be a minutes limit, but I feel like when he's on the court, he just racks up stats. He's one of those guys where, you know, his physical presence is always felt. I didn't know how he would look physically. During the pregame warmups, he took it kind of easy. You know, he didn't really break out the through-the-leg windmills and all that stuff. So I was wondering, okay, well, maybe is he trying to ease back into this? And I think that's really how it went to start. I mean, Alvin Gentry said it, he played passive for the first half, and they basically needed to kind of unleash him in the second half. But I started to see some of the things I was hoping for when he's going through and grabbing contested rebounds and bodies are just flying off of him, when he's catching a lob pass in traffic and finishing it with his left hand over the defense, when he's stepping up confidently and hitting those three-pointers. That's not the book on him, Jim. He's not known as a three-point shooter at all. I mean, that was never the strength of his game. San Antonio and Greg Popovich were just trying to dare him to shoot it, and he just kept shooting, and hit four of them in a row. So we got a little bit of everything from him, but I do think I maybe expected just a touch more because I thought he would play more. And limiting him to 18 minutes, it feels very conservative, very restrained from the Pelicans. And you can just tell they're trying to take the cautious approach.
We're talking to Ben Golliver. That's interesting. I was going to say to you, because no sooner than that went down, the complaining started online and on the broadcast about that minutes restriction, almost implying that the team really didn't know what the hell they were doing. So what do you make? You started that thought. What do you make of how David Griffin, Alvin Gentry, and the Pelicans training staff have handled his recovery from the very start, actually?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, first of all the complainers, they're just like kids at a candy store, and the candy store closed early. You know what I mean? And
right,
they're looking in through the window saying, oh, man, I want to keep eating, basically. I mean, nobody wanted that night to end early. They stretched out his recovery basically an extra month from the original timeline. He was supposed to come back in kind of early to mid-December. They wound up being very cautious. He said he was very frustrated. On Tuesday, he told reporters he felt like he wanted to kick some chairs at various points of his recovery because he just couldn't move how he wanted to move, and it was dragging on and taking so long. And so for him to finally get a taste of the action, to really put it together in the fourth quarter, and then to have to watch from the sidelines, it's got to be agonizing. But you know what, Jim? I kind of like it. He pushed back a little bit in his post-game press conference. He wasn't just going by the book of saying what, you know, the right thing to say, quote unquote. He was saying, I wanted to be out there. I'm not worried about my longevity of my career. I want to go out there and win a game. I love his competitive spirit. I think it's a huge part of what makes him such a tantalizing prospect going forward and such an important figure for basketball going forward. And the idea that he's just over there seething because he didn't get to be on the court for crunch time, they lose that game, I think honestly that could be the best thing to happen to him, you know, because as he goes forward, he's going to remember to cherish those moments once he gets them.
Ben Golver is joining us. He's in New Orleans. So let's talk about him going forward. Nobody, as you point out, Ben, is expecting him to be an elite three-point shooter over the course of a season. So what did you make of the rest of his offensive game? Like, was that where you ultimately expected to be? Or is that still a major work in progress as he continues to get into shape?
Yeah, he needs to get into better shape. I mean, for sure. He was clutching his shorts and holding his waist during pregame warmups. And like I said, he wasn't really going that hard. So that was a little bit of a warning sign to me. You saw him come out very early in the third quarter. Again, he had a couple turnovers, was really tired, and Alvin Gentry was basically just like, look, you know, catch your breath. I mean, that's what it looked like to me anyways. So I think we're going to see more from his offensive portfolio as he does get back into shape. But what really stands out to me is just the quick burst. He goes from 0 to 60 off the dribble so quickly. He's really tough to contain in those scenarios. And then they also do a really nice job of mixing it up offensively. So he's on the move a lot, and it's almost like a football running back going into motion or something like that. They play a very unique style to maximize his athletic gifts. So we're going to see a lot more from him offensively than we saw on Wednesday night. He looked a little bit bottled up and contained. He did look like he struggled to finish in traffic around really long defenders, and that could be an issue for him because he is a little bit shorter. And I do think they're going to play him at center a lot. So he's going to be going against guys who are longer than him, you know, pretty regularly. But, you know, to me, there was enough flashes to be, you know, come away from it thinking it was a promising start. And I just think there's going to be more to come. You know, all the pressure, all the anticipation. I mean, he was talking about how he couldn't sleep the night before. There's dozens of media members at their practice. I mean, the whole thing is, it's a real show down here. And I think as he acclimates to that, as he gets more comfortable to that, we're going to see his natural skills unleashed.
He's 19. Let's not lose track of that fact. Ben Golver joining us. You know, Ben, that point you made about him going from 0 to 60 down the court and doing it so fast, you know, with that power, a couple of moments really stick out to me. I love that rebound that he had over Jakob Poeltl, who, by the way, had much better position, is much taller, but Zion just bodies this guy and out-jumps him for the rebound and then starts to break the other way at a very high speed. What did you think when you saw him do that?
Well, have we ever seen a guy posterize someone on a rebound? I mean, is that what
right.
happened? I think we have
exactly.
a new category for to track for Zion Williamson. Oh, it's crazy. You mentioned his age a minute ago. Can we return to that? Because so many teenagers who started slow in a high-pressure moment like that, or even just NBA players in general, regardless of age, they would get to that fourth quarter and say, you know what, I got my feet wet, everything's cool. There might be that tendency to just mentally settle and to say, you know what, like, write it off. You know, I can come back and play again on Friday night. There's going to be another 40 games for this season. Chalk it up, and it's okay. I just had an off night, right? Zion did the exact opposite. He did not settle. He welcomed the pressure. He stepped into those three-pointers so confidently. They were daring him to shoot it, and he was like, you know what, screw that. I'm going to go out there and do it. And I love that response from him. Again, I think we focus so much on the physical tools, the overwhelming stuff, that the mental makeup gets lost, the competitive spirit, the desire to be the center of attention, you know, feeding off of the crowd, you know, a couple heat checks in there for sure as the crowd was getting excited. He understands the moment. And then there's just this charisma and this moxie about him too, Jim. He's got the star power, and these are reasons why I'm so high on him, and I've kind of been banging the drum for Zion here for the last couple of years.
No, you certainly have. You certainly have. You said, in fact, and Ben, I know this, you regard him as your large adult son. So as yeah. being his, since he's your large adult son and you're his not as large adult father, what would you say to him after that performance? And what do you want him thinking about going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's a proud moment for his adopted family. Look, I think there's a lot of people here in New Orleans who are catching the fever, right? This is a football town. I went around and talked to people for a story for the Washington Post yesterday. It just basically like, what do they make of Zion, right? And they're still in this kind of hangover effect from LSU football's title, which was only a couple weeks ago, and the Saints season just ended. And so this idea that they can kind of ramp up for Zion, it's kind of convenient timing for them. But they're also not used to be, you know, treating Pelicans players in the same way that they would treat like a Joe Burrow or Coach O there for LSU. I mean, those guys are like kings. They're deities down here. And I think, even during the height of the Anthony Davis era, maybe he never quite ascended to that level. But I think Zion, you know, it's a phenomenon, right? I mean, we see it nationally. Everyone wants to talk about it. He's going to lead all sports coverage here basically for the next 24 hours. And even the 24-hour run-up to the game, you know, he was the lead story pretty much everywhere. That's going to continue. And I think here locally, I think that the fans and the fan base are going to really realize what they've got with this kid. There's going to be more special moments. And I think he's going to just be the adopted son of the city.
I mean, he is electric. So, Ben, do they feel like a playoff team with Zion?
Well, here's my problem. The playoff race is so crowded that even a loss like last night for them, it matters a lot, right? I mean, there's so many different teams, like five, six different teams all jockeying for that eighth seed. And they're, you know, playing from behind because they got themselves into a little hole when Zion was out. To expect him or to put the pressure on him to turn that whole thing around and down the stretch and to play consistently enough coming off of an injury to sort of be the boost that they need, I think that's expecting a little bit too much. You got some good teams in there, San Antonio, Memphis. I mean, they're both starting to put it together. Even Phoenix has been putting it together here pretty recently. So they've got some hurdles for sure. The good news, though, they have a very easy schedule the rest of the way. And I think, I mean, just imagine the payoff, Jim. Can you imagine the first-round series, Lakers versus Pelicans, LeBron versus Zion, Anthony Davis's old team versus his new team, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart against their former team? I mean, the storylines would be crazy. TV ratings would be out of control. I'm sure somewhere in New York City, Adam Silver's, you know, kind of circling that one and saying, man, maybe we can get that.
I mean, it would be one of the best things ever. He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. He's the host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, host of Open Floor Podcast, and as I mentioned, a very good friend of the program. Ben, great job. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your thoughts.
My pleasure, Jim. Take care, man.
Good job, Ben. Well done. Ben Golliver talking about his large adult son.